Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Here we go. 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 This is it.
This is Top Flight Time Machine. I'm Andy Dawson.
I'm Sam Delaney.
This is part 7 of the Keegan Odyssey. We have reached the stage where I think it's 1973 in 6 episodes. So we've only got another 46 years.
We're not even in Germany yet. But we are onto it. It felt like we were never going to get out of his childhood at one point. And yeah. I was thinking, this is getting really tough. Like, but we're at least now, he is famous. He's got his HQ in the back of Lenny's junk shop.
Yeah,
Lenny
in
the
Liverpool.
Junk shop.
Yeah.
And he's like the most famous footballer in the country pretty much
at
the moment,
he's
isn't he?
In his absolute pomp at Liverpool. It's his first season. He says, I scored 10 more games, 10 more times in my first season for Liverpool. My partnership with John Toshack was so effective that we were even put through a test on television to find out if there was anything in the theory that we had a telepathic understanding.
Was being a witch still illegal in the 70s?
It was one of them ones, I think, where it was on the statute books, but you couldn't get done for it.
Because I'm thinking, who decided that there needs to be a public trial of Kevin Keegan and John Toshack? It seems a bit over the top. It's like they're watching these two fellas playing well for Liverpool, and instead of just thinking, that's nice, some fucker, probably some bureaucrat, has gone, I don't like this. This is uncanny. It seems almost unnatural. We need a show trial.
It'll have been some fucking hippie at the BBC, I think.
Yeah.
One of them ones with the long hair and the flares that made current affairs documentaries like World in Action.
Yeah.
And wanted to branch out and maybe humiliate some footballers. One of these ones that doesn't like football. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, like in those days people did
smoke roll-ups and stuff like that. And
I wrote a story a while back about, a few years ago, about the classic Graham Taylor Do I Not Like That documentary.
Yeah.
And the blokes who made it said that at the time they got access to Graham Taylor relatively easily because it wasn't the sort of request that came in much,
right?
And they, you know, they were paying him quite a lot of money.
Nobody wanted media access to the England manager.
Correct. And when he took it, it was a production company called Chrysalis. When they took it to Channel 4, head of documentaries, it was one of the blokes that you're describing. It was like
the hippie.
Yeah, and it was like the early 90s, and he was a bit sort of like, oh, no, we make documentaries here about culture and the arts and serious subjects. No one wants to see that. And the people are going, we have got no holes barred access to the England manager, which is pretty much the most high-profile position other than the Prime Minister in the whole fucking country. And the bloke's got no interest because it was a prejudice against football. And then, of course, it gets made. In the end, they showed it to Michael Grade, who was the boss. Who, so what you like about Grade, obviously got something about him.
He knows a hit.
He said, I know a hit when I see one.
Sat there that sounds fucking great, we'll have it.
They screened it. And it's a great story. Like, with the head of documentaries, who I imagine looking like, you know Roger Melly's producer, Tom?
Yeah.
With the beard.
The scribbled beard.
Yeah. I think it was like him, oh, you won't like this at all, Sir Michael. This is dynamite stuff. We'll take the whole lot. Here's £1 million in a briefcase. We'll call it Do I Not Like That?
Get me a shipping container full of it. Ship it in.
We'll pay you in fanny powder.
So Keegan says they did the telepathic test. Each of us had to look at a colour and a shape and then transmit the image to one another using only the force of our minds, he says. Only the force of our minds, as opposed to, you know, talking and that. He says it came back negative.
Fuck. Well, lucky for him. Because what I'm saying is, it all started, I don't know what the show was, it might have been, you know, all fun and games.
Granada reports,
but
I reckon.
But had they said, well, that's amazing, our study confirms that you are actually able to communicate with each other, and everyone goes, whee, and Kevin goes, oh, well, there you go. You learn something new every day, fantastic stuff. And they go, no, Kevin, not fantastic. And suddenly some police come on as a surprise. Like in Surprise, Surprise.
Not police, like, Secret Service, MI5.
Hey, what? Who are these lads? We work for the government. Well, you step this way. You are going to be...
taken to a facility.
Taken to a facility, and you will be... You may not know this, Mr. Keegan, or you, Mr. Toshak, but it is one of the few crimes in this country still punishable by death. We have been left to assume that you are witches and you will be hung by the neck until dead in front of Her Majesty the Queen.
Before that happens, we will take you to a facility, two separate facilities in the countryside, and we will strip you down to your very psychological basics. We will completely dismantle you psychologically. Yeah, exactly.
But not before we've got you to get inside the heads of the Russians.
And this is 1973.
Remember, this is still the Cold War.
You don't even know what a hard drive is, but no. The very words themselves should make you fearful.
Yeah.
Quite rightly, because that's what's going to happen to you.
We want you to find out what's going on in Brezhnev's head.
Yeah.
Once you've done that, we're going to wipe the hard drive and then we're going to fucking hang
you. We're going to take you to the Russian border and sit you in a van and point you to where we think Brezhnev is within Russia.
I mean, you'll probably know that anyway, just by thinking about it.
Well,
you'll
need
know.
You to tell us where he is.
And you just point in the direction where he is, have a little think up, tell us what he's planning.
What he's up to.
And once you've told us all his plans, we're going to have to wipe your mind clean and then kill you. Is that clear? Whatever you say.
Just another mission for Electric Kevin. So he says, yeah, it came back negative, but rather than spoil everyone's fun, we kept that quiet, I don't know, and carried on living up to the perception that the pair of us could somehow read each other's minds. Thankfully, of course, it did come back negative.
This is it!
We move on to Tommy Smith.
Oh, yeah.
I have to admit, I did think Tommy was a bit of a bully. You couldn't go past him if you were part of his group in our training runs. Hey, you little swine, where do you think you're going? He'd bark. But the bigger problem was his perception of me and the way I'd been seen at Liverpool, and he resented the publicity I was getting. It began to dawn on me we might have a problem during one trip away when I came down to the hotel restaurant in the morning and ordered the same breakfast as another player. When the waiter put a plate in front of me, I got stuck in without realising it might be somebody else's. That's not yours, Tommy shouted. Wait your turn, you're not as big as you think you are.
Whoa, fuck you now.
This is just over breakfast. A double breakfast.
Tommy Smith. Was he English, but he never played for England?
I don't know. Yes.
Yeah, all right.
Let's just imagine he talked like how I just did there.
Yeah, okay.
A little bit like our usual character, but a bit more vociferous.
Yeah.
He was trying to bring me down a peg or two, and it was important I stood up to him. I told him where to go, to put it bluntly. Get over there, Tommy Smith. Don't you go telling me what to do with my breakfast. I need my eggs and bacon in the morning. You know that. He says, it was always likely there would be some afters, and sure enough, there was one occasion when we raised our fists to start trading punches until big Larry Lloyd jumped in to separate us. Tommy was streetwise enough to use me at times. There was a time Hummel offered me a small fortune, £3,000 if I remember correctly. Oh, he remembers correctly.
Oh,
he knows how much it was. To wear a pair of their white boots. Alan Ball had been signed up to do the same, as had Martin Chivers at Spurs and Alan Hinton of Derby. It was good money, but I felt I should ask Tommy, as the captain, what he thought about me ditching the traditional black boots everyone wore in those days. Tommy wasn't impressed. They're not for you, he explained. Just picture it. Martin Chivers of Spurs, white socks, white boots. That'll look okay. Alan Hinton, same again at Derby. White socks, white boots, fine. Everton, white socks, white boots, perfect for Borley. Liverpool, though, red shirts, red shorts, red socks and white boots. You're going to look a prat if you're not careful.
That's a real Roy Keane move as well, isn't it? White fucking boots.
Yeah. He says that it wasn't what I wanted to hear, £3,000, but I didn't want to push my luck if that's what the captain thought of it. So anyway,
fuck off.
The next weekend we turned up for the game, and as we were about to run out, I looked over at Tommy and did a double take.
Nah.
Yes, he was wearing a red shirt, red shorts and red socks, and you can probably guess the colour of his boots.
Fucking hell.
He saw me staring, then he lifted up his foot so I could get a better look. Hummel, he announced.
What an absolute cunt.
Can't turn down £1,500 at this stage of my career, lad. Tommy right. Smith, only worth half a Keegan.
Half a Keegan. I didn't say anything, but he knew.
He was very self-conscious about the boots, says Keegan. He even started dabbing on streaks of red boot polish to stop them dazzling quite so brightly under the floodlights. Tommy being Tommy, he started a rumour that it was the blood of his opponents.
Oh, fucking hell. God. Tommy Smith, what a wanker.
This is it!
Yeah, he talks about that Liverpool team of the early 70s and how it was assembled by Shankly without them spending a great deal of money.
Yeah.
They did it on the cheap, really. He says Kevin himself cost $33,000. Clemens was $27,000. He was Scunthorpe as well, I think, wasn't he?
Was he?
Or somewhere like that. And Steve Highway came straight from university.
Ooh!
Costing us nothing. So imagine he was at his graduation ceremony, Steve Highway, took off his mortarboard,
yeah,
threw it in the air, ripped off his gown, and underneath there's a football kit.
Shanks was there, standing. What Shanks used to do
take
was...
Take that gown off!
He used to go to the... You know, what do they call the ceremony where you... graduation ceremony. And he'd just stand in the crowd, and he prided himself on being able to spot potential footballing talent.
An athletic body.
Just by watching them in their cap and gown walking up onto the stage to accept their certificate.
Yeah.
There was something about that Highway lad. I think he'd just graduated in economics and philosophy. But the way he took to that stage and grabbed his certificate with the assurance of a footballer, a Liverpool footballer.
He ascended those steps and I could make out the powerful thighs that lay beneath the gown. He's for me, I thought. I'd sat there for 6 hours previously watching them all one by one going, no.
Most of them were pathetic wimps.
No. Some of them were even women. That was allowed back then.
There was no way I was going to sully the good name of Liverpool Football Club by employing a woman to play in our first 11. However powerful her thighs might have been. As soon as Highway descended from that stage, I was waiting for him, contract in hand. Lun, son, the name's Bill Shankly. I have a wonderful opportunity for you. Have you ever thought about moving into the professional footballer industry?
Yeah, well, I've never actually kicked a ball. I've never given it any moment's thought.
I was thinking of getting a job in the civil service.
Yes.
Forget that. You play for Liverpool now. Sign this.
I bundled him into a van, took him down to Melwood, gave him a ball.
Before he knew what was happening, Bob Paisley crept out from behind a curtain and bashed him over the head with a rolling pin. When he came to, he was playing in a cop tie against Rochdale.
Sure enough, he scored 2 goals and made one. I was right yet again.
After that, there was no turning back for him, however much he begged.
He seemed to enjoy it. Steve Highway came straight from university, costing us nothing. Brian Hall was another university graduate.
Fucking hell. Spending a lot of time hanging around the campus, wasn't
they? They don't do this anymore, do they, the football teams? They try and sign them all up when they're six and groom them into androids.
Yeah, they caught them in a net in Portugal when they're like still fucking toddlers.
Yeah, before they can even see.
Before they can even see a thing, yeah.
But no, Liverpool, Shankly used to go to Liverpool University and scoop up the best talent from the graduation ceremonies. Tommy Smith, Chris Lawler were local discoveries. Jimmy Case came from non-league. Fuck me, that was a hard player, Jimmy Case.
Jimmy Case and Tommy Smith.
Yeah,
and at one point, Graham Souness.
Yeah.
I think he must have overlapped with definitely Case.
Case came 2 years after Keegan for £10,000. Ray Kennedy cost £200,000. That's big money. He'd come from Arsenal, hadn't he? Mm. Toshack and Peter Cormack were £110,000 each. And I suppose £65,000 would have been a big deal when Emlyn Hughes signed from Blackpool in 1967, he says. Ooh, a little bit of salt in that sentence there,
isn't
there?
Yeah, there is. I suppose it would have been a lot.
Don't really know. But we weren't beating teams because we were blowing everyone out of the water in the transfer market. Liverpool managed to do it while being prudent with their spending. We never came close to breaking the transfer record in all my time there. The end. It's not the end, though. There's plenty more to come.
Jalapeño.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Jalapeño.
Quite a lot of stuff about Bill Shankly
in
this chapter, as you would expect. Shankly understood there had to be laughter at any successful football club.
Something that Keegan very much took from him when he became a manager.
Exactly, became a court jester of football.
Yeah.
Shanks was never short of a line, whether he was joshing with the fans or having a bit of fun at the expense of one of the players. You cunt. He always used to mention his daughter during practice matches. Christ, he'd shout. Oh, Jeanette could have scored that one.
Oh, Jeanette.
And he was blessed with such great comedy timing that there were times when I was actually laughing while running for the ball. Liverpool was a happy place full of banter and levity.
Have you ever read Red or Dead, that David Peace book about Shankly?
Like
novelization. I mean, it's fucking bananas.
No, I
it's a bananas
book. I read the Clough one. I never got around
to
that.
Have you, I mean, the Clough one seems mad.
Is
the Shankly one is just...
written in the same style as the
Yeah, but
the
that
Clough
times
one.
A million.
Oh, God.
I walked to the club. The club called Liverpool. Liverpool FC. The F stands for football.
The C stands for club.
The C stands for club. I walk through the door. The door that divides the street to the room. The room where I live. And it just like, it's just fucking mad. It's madness. But you do get a little... I mean, obviously, it's all well-researched.
He's done well, David Peace, hasn't he, out of that gimmick?
Yeah, he has done
really well.
Yeah. He's doing one about Dennis Wise at Leeds next. But anyway, He used to do something where him and Bob Baisley built a box, a big wooden box.
Right.
And they would put, and it was quite small.
Mm.
It was like, say, 8 foot by 8 foot or something. And they would they'd put a ladder, get the players to climb into the box, really high walls so they couldn't see out. And then they'd just lob footballs in and get them to control them. Like one touch control and kick it back out again.
Just one player at a time in this box?
No, I think there might be a couple. So it's like you were sort of fighting over the ball at the same time as trying to control it and then get it out without it just bouncing all over the walls and stuff like that. And that was, he thinks, a breakthrough moment in because when
Development
he first arrived, results didn't pick up straight away. And then they built the box and they all, for some reason, improved as a team.
We should do a podcast in a box like that.
I've always wanted to. It's always been a dream of mine.
Yeah. People can throw in ideas. On bits of paper.
Funny dreams, isn't it? Do you have any? I mean, you're quite a private man. Do you have any dreams that you would like to share, like life on dreams? Because like my son Len recently said to me, really out of the blue, that one of his dreams in life.
Mm.
I mean, he's only seven, but he said it's always been a dream of mine to go up to the top of the Eiffel Tower. I shouldn't have laughed. It just seemed funny.
Any seven-year-old that begins a sentence with, it's always been a dream of mine.
I was like, oh, all right. I'll try and, we'll do that one day.
Do it in the summer.
Yeah.
It's not hard.
Yeah.
We'll be there an hour and a half.
It's because I showed him View to a Kill once. That was probably where he got the idea from.
The Grace Jones connection,
Grace Jones bit, yeah.
There's not enough Grace Jones in this podcast.
Do you have any dreams?
Well, like as an
fulfilled
not...
or unfulfilled. I've shared mine and it's to do a podcast in a box. My son is to go up the Eiffel Tower. Mine is to do a podcast in a box.
Well, Johnny, because I suggested it to you. The podcast in a box.
No, I'd always... You said it and I was delighted because I'd always...
Yeah, I don't believe you.
I'd always been embarrassed to share it with you because I thought you'd tease me.
No. I'd like
you'd say, shut up, Sam, it's a pathetic dream.
I'd like to develop a new way of cooking an egg.
Mm.
Perhaps. Don't feel as though they've
mean,
all
like
been done.
You're scrambled.
Yeah, fried, poached.
Coddled?
If you want, yeah.
That's one, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, there must be another way, you're right.
Yeah, but I just can't quite get to what it is. I feel like I'm in touching distance of it, but not
sometimes
quite.
You think you're there and you scribble it down and then you go, no, you screw
up
the piece
of paper.
I wake
up 3 in the morning and go, oh, yeah.
Wake up in the night and there's eggs broken everywhere.
Yeah, I mean, even fried on a car engine, that's been done. Fried on a rock in the desert.
Fried on a pavement, done.
Yeah. There's got to be something else, hasn't there? It's got to be.
Hard boiled.
Let's leave it for another time.
Well, if anyone's got any ideas, you know how to
get
in touch.
We'll do a series of spin-off podcasts about it.
Eggcast.
Red Hot Content!
What's next?
Shanks dissing Bobby Moore. I don't like
Bobby
the sound
Moore.
Of this.
Well, I'm sure you don't, but it's going to happen. Shankly liked to stand in the passage outside the dressing rooms. He did it deliberately so he could inspect our opponents. checking if anyone was missing and listening into their conversations. Just anything to get that little extra edge, you know what I mean? He'd come back to our changing room and deliver his verdict. "I've just seen that Bobby Moore," he announced. "Big bags under his eyes, limping. He's been out in a nightclub again last night, I can tell. One of them discotheques with the foxy ladies."
Disgusting.
"And the little drinks, the little red drinks. What's it called? Wine? I think it's called wine."
Sickening.
"Anyway, he's been drinking some of that."
He's let that World Cup go to his head.
His gaze darted around the room and then he was staring straight at me, he says. "He's scared stiff of playing against you, son. That's why he's been out on the drink. You'll run him silly. It wrenches at my heart. It's tragic because he was a great player." I'm almost in tears here, Kevin.
I'm welling up.
"He's gone.
Humiliate him.
He's gone, but show him no mercy. Do your job, son."
This is exactly like these the are his words. Kid.
I've added some in myself, but these are his jobs. "He's gone, but show him no mercy. Do your job, son. Massacre him."
Fucking hell. Well, I mean,
so you expect
if you're a professional footballer, I can't imagine that you would. Your instinct would be to do anything else. You wouldn't think of it that way. You wouldn't think, "I'm going to massacre Bobby Moore," but you would think,
well, literally.
You wouldn't kill him, but you'd. If you're Kevin Keegan, you would think, "Fuck it, I'm just going to score as many goals as I would in any game, irrespective of who you are." But I suppose he's saying, don't be intimidated by Bobby Moore. He's not the player he was.
And he's, you know, Keegan at that point is probably visualising Bobby Moore as being that fella from the Cop that came out on his debut, stinking
him
a beer and giving him a kiss and kiss the turf.
He's trying to paint a picture.
He's probably thinking
like that.
that's the level he's playing against.
So what happens? Does he say, "I went out and scored that trick"?
"By the time he had finished, I was convinced one of the legends of our game was actually playing on one leg and the worst defender in the entire league. We won 1-0 and I scored the goal."
Well, hardly a massacre.
Slightly unbiased there. Afterwards, the
sounds
boss...
lucky to me.
Afterwards, the boss sat next to me beaming. "Jesus Christ, what a great player that Bobby Moore is. You'll never play against a better or fitter player. He's a master, but you had the beating of him today. Growing confidence, son. You were up against world class and you ran rings around him. It was like watching a cocker spaniel chasing a piece of silver paper on the wind," or something like that. "It was classic Shank psychology," he says. And it was true. Moore was magnificent that day, despite being on the losing side, if I say so myself.
Yeah, it's just that I was too good for him.
Yeah. But
Shankly was basically insane.
A lunatic.
I've always thought this.
Lunatic.
I'm reading this. I thought
a
this already.
A swivel-eyed Scottish lunatic.
He's just mad, but he was like... the madman that Liverpool needed.
Mad but
at
effective.
That time.
Yeah.
He came, I can't remember where he was. He was at somewhere like Huddersfield, was it?
Yeah.
And he was just, and Liverpool were on their arse. Mm. And he came and he was just fucking so mad that they were sort of, he created an energy and insanity around the club that seemed to work. It was like Brian Clough, also mad.
Yeah. There's a lot to be said for going into a work situation and just basically, whether you are mad or you want to pretend to be mad, but just fucking get in there and fuck things up with
some. Yeah, I mean, if you go in and you try insanity. To be, "Hey, I'm just a nice guy. Don't worry, everyone. My door's always open. Come and talk to me." People don't find that inspirational. In fact, they'll exploit it.
Yeah.
From my experience, if you're going in and you're a new boss, it's best to turn up first day carrying a fucking pig or something and just like lob it.
Yeah.
Just lob a fucking pig into the, or like release a load of rats out of a box into the office.
Yeah.
Jump up on the desk, get your cock out, and just start fucking screaming at everyone.
I was on the way through to the train station this morning. I was listening to Brendan Rodgers being interviewed on TalkSport, and he was talking in that way he does, where he kind of over intellectualizes everything and makes himself sound cleverer than he is. But at the same time, he was laying down excuses for things that will go wrong in the future.
Right.
Do you know what I mean? And then he kept referring back to Liverpool and how they lost the Premier League title a few years ago while throwing in lots of excuses as well. That distanced himself from what had gone wrong. Yeah. And I thought, that's Brendan Rodgers. Yeah. You're not for me.
Yeah.
Whereas Bill Shankly,
with
the fucking mind games.
Just say something bizarre.
Power players left, right and centre.
So if he was on TalkSport today and Alan Brazil was like, "Well, you must have some regrets in your career," and Bill Shankly would be, "I'll tell you what I don't regret." Do you know what I mean? And he'd just go off on something about his Jeanette or something like that. It's just like fucking madness, just distraction techniques the whole way.
Definitely. But then Shankly retired. The end came. And it came suddenly as well. They just won the 1974 FA Cup. They beat Newcastle 3-0 in the final. And Kevin says, I will never forget the stunned responses when Granada TV sent one of its correspondents. I think it was Tony Wilson. I've seen the footage. I think it was Tony Wilson.
Oh, I've seen
later
that
of Factory Records.
Yeah.
Granada TV sent one of its correspondents into the centre of Liverpool to get the reaction of the team's supporters. Keegan says, the footage is still on the internet. As if you weren't sure that that's the kind of thing that could happen.
If you don't believe me.
It's still on the internet. It was 1974.
I got my one of my boys to look it up and it were there.
My ghostwriter went and had a look for me.
I've looked it up. I think I must have looked it up when I was reading this book originally.
Right.
And yeah, I mean, it is what he
says. Oh, you went off and did some extra research.
I enjoy reading a memoir. Yeah. And when there are references made to particular news stories or whatever, I will often accompany my reading with looking at the clips they're on about.
Wow, have you got some kind of nerve centre where you've got the book on a plinth and then a computer terminal next to it?
Have you seen Sliver, where one of the Baldwin brothers tries to... It's the closest there's ever been to a film of this podcast.
Right.
In that, you know, like increasingly a lot of content on our main podcast is about ways in which you've opportunistically seen tits.
Yeah. And it started out as a football podcast.
Yeah. And that film, Sliver,
yeah,
with one of the Baldwins and Sharon Stone, they should have called it, and more people would have gone to see it, Opportunistic Tits.
Oh.
Cause
I've never seen it.
It's about a bloke. The way you'll remember it most is because the theme tune to it, if you can call it a theme tune in a movie, was I Can't Help Falling in Love with You, but the terrible UB40 cover version.
Jesus.
Do you remember that?
I remember the song. I've not seen the film, though.
The video was at number one. The song was at number one for a long time.
Yeah.
And a lot of it was the video they kept playing on top of the pops. Was bits in the film, and it's the geezer. And I think it's like he's a landlord. He's a sleazy landlord in a luxury like apartment block in America. And he's got a load of CCTV. And he's got a nerve centre where he watches all of the tenants going about their business, including
Sharon Stone.
Sharon Stone. Oh, I seen that Sharon Stone get her fanny out in Basic Instinct.
This one.
With any luck, she'll do the same here.
Sure enough, it were tits this time. There they were.
But fair enough, I'll take what I can get.
I mean, the fanny, you only saw that for like half a second. But with this one, the tits, it was like 6 or 7 seconds.
It were a lingering shot.
You didn't have to like try and get on the freeze frame button like you did with Basic Instinct.
I went to see it with the missus. I went to see it with the missus. You know, if it had gone on for any longer, she would have got a bit, you know, aggro with me.
Yeah.
But as it were, it were fine.
And you can't do freeze frame in the cinema. By the way, for the VHS to come out.
Yeah, anyway, Sliver.
I don't know how we got to that, but yeah. So what's like Sliver? This podcast like Sliver?
Yeah, well, it's like Sliver is like one of the stories that people have been increasingly sending in. You know, we go,
right,
surprise tits,
yeah,
and someone goes, oh, well, you know, I was climbing up a tree when I was a schoolboy and I saw the PE teacher at tits. Someone might email and go in, between the years 1989 and 1996, I was the landlord of a luxury apartment block in Manhattan, where I set up an elaborate and secretive CCTV system in order to spy on all of my tenants' tits. All the best. Love the podcast. From Dave, a cunter in Norwich.
Yeah, I mean, I haven't checked the emails for about the last 3 days, but I do get the feeling that we are becoming more and more creepy and sinister.
Yeah, well, so we should change some of the topics.
Yeah, okay.
To be a bit more, you know, nice.
So anyway, yeah, Shankly left, but then he kept coming back. He kept turning up at Melwood after he retired. Bob Paisley took her over obviously.
Yeah.
And Keegan says, Liverpool didn't often get things wrong, but they did this time spectacularly, I think, because just letting him... I think he still had the keys to the training ground. He just let himself in. Someone should have had a quiet word when he started turning up. He just couldn't let go. The players would see him and instinctively greet him with, hello, boss, whereas Bob Paisley would get a, morning, Bob. We were all pleased to see Shanks, but it undermined the new manager, and that, I suspect, was when the aggravation started. I think at some point I'm probably going to have to replace you on this podcast, Sam.
Who with?
I don't know, I haven't thought about it yet, but it'll happen. Mm. And then I think this will be similar. You won't be able to let go. It might be. You won't let go. You'll still like keep wandering in, and you know we'll have to try and stop ourselves from saying hello to you and engaging you in conversation while we're doing.
Well, if it's the same, then people will go.
Dawson and Bott, as will be called.
Shankly will be going. People will still be going, hello, gaffer, to me.
Yeah. What people?
The people.
The fella that does the yeah, presses the record in there.
Acast, or when I'm recording it remotely, my...
cat.
My, yeah, I was going to say members of my family, but they're not.
Gaffer.
Yeah, and then results bot will feel undermined.
Yeah, well, I'll just program him not to be undermined. Piece of piss. So, yeah, so Paisley took over. Shanks kept turning up. And no one bothered changing the locks. The situation was allowed to fester, says Kevin. It was a scandal. He was made to feel like his face didn't fit.
Mm.
And then, of course, he died in 1981.
Apparently, he used to, in the end, he felt like so unwelcome, he ended up going over training with Everton.
That was what he said. Kevin mentions this in the book. Mm. Shankly said he felt more comfortable at Everton than he did at Liverpool. Yeah, well, not much loyalty there, is there?
No.
All right, that's it for this episode. We'll open the next episode, part 8, with Bill Shankly's funeral.
So that's something to look forward
to. Yeah, that'll be next week. Thanks for listening, everyone. Ta-da.
Bye.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.